Inside the Cross Podcast.
Thank you for stopping by the Inside Lacrosse Special Edition Selection Sunday podcast, where we will bring you insight, analysis, storylines, and hopefully a few laughs from the college lacrosse coaches whose teams are in the NCAA tournament. But first, we want to start with the NCAA Division I Men's Lacrosse Championship Committee Chair, Jim Sidlisky, who has been quite the friend of Inside Lacrosse as he has served in this capacity over the last two seasons, this being the end of his final hurrah in the position of his four-year term. And Jim, before we get going, I just want to say thanks for not only what you've done in terms of helping us at Inside Lacrosse understand a little bit better what it is that you guys do over there, particularly as it pertains to the selection, but also just kind of what you've done for the sport and overall in trying to provide us stewards most substantially this season, bringing in the two playing games to make sure that the championship field maintains its integrity.
But Terry, that's very humbling and very kind, and I think that's how we as a committee view ourselves as steward of the sports. You know, my conference background is being someone who tries to deliver member services, and you know, everything we think about in that room is how we are serving the membership and to be equitable and to have answers that are defensible. So that's hopefully what we're, you know, giving the group this year.
And that's kind of where I want to start, and it's basically a kind of an overarching question. I have maintained over the course of the last month or so that whether it was the disparity of you know, the teams at the critical hinge points or the general understanding of the way in which the criteria has been and likely would be implemented, that this was going to be a relatively straightforward selection process devoid of drama. And I wasn't in the room. It wasn't my skin in the game. So I want to put that to you. How do you characterize how difficult this year's process was in comparison to the three previous selections that you've been a part of?
Yeah, you know, that's a great question. I think the interesting thing is each of those years had different unique circumstances that became more important to defend. And every time you want to defend a decision, you tend to create another graph, another one of those. By the way, we're keeping 3M in business, those large 3M post-it things that go on the wall. We had 44 of those all around the wall. We started covering up windows in the selection room. We create those grids and those visual cues to go through all of our selection criteria. And, you know, in this particular year, it was unique in that we had the play-in games, but the way the results fell, it was kind of easy to put those together. Then once we figured out where they were going to advance to, that was a little bit easier to put together. Not to say that the process to getting to the point where it clicked in was easy, but you know, we wanted to really be diligent. The same exercise we did to determine, you know, the 1 and 2 seed was the exact same exercise we did to determine if Hofstra was in or Harvard was in. And that's the neat thing about having the we're at this point, we memorize the 11 selection criteria, which are a combination of actual game results, like common opponents, head-to-head, record versus ranked opponents, and then the data that comes out of those results, like strength of schedule, your average RPI win, your average RPI loss, so on and so forth. And it's been a tremendous exercise where we just continue to build on it every year and are able to just continue to drill down and define how these things are used. And not that they've been used wrong in the past, but it's gotten to such a level where the coaches on the RAC committee and the coaches in the IMLCA has been such a buy-in to the messaging that we have. And that kind of goes back to the thing about, well, why don't you use the eye test when you just go to the seeding process? Because once you select the teams in that really vacuumous area about making sure the criteria is applied consistently across the board in all available areas to all teams that are under consideration, why don't you just kind of get loosey-goosey with the seeds? Because we've come to find that if you do that and you do the quote-unquote eyeball test, it's not defensible. You can't, it's very difficult to defend your selections. Well, why'd you do that? Well, we did it here because of this team beat that team. But what about in this situation? Oh, well, we use different criteria for those two teams. Well, that doesn't make any sense. You've got this whole body of work, and that's three magic words this year is body of work. And we've been hammering that since the convention in December all the way through the season. If anybody who would listen to us crazy enough to listen to us, that this is it. It's the body of work. And when you start to drill down and deconstruct things, you can see it. And you say, okay, that's defensible. I might not understand it initially because a lot of these things are very visceral reactions that people have when you see a bracket for the first time. I mean, we've been so immersed in this stuff. It's, you know, you go to sleep thinking about it. You wake up in the middle of the night dreaming about it. And you wake up in the morning picking up where you left off. We've been so immersed in this that it's almost second nature when we get into the room and know what we need to do to, you know, implement and execute all these different selection criteria and analysis we have going on.
And I do want to jump into some of the specific hinge points or interesting elements of the bracket that you guys decided on. But one more general question before we do that, and that is, over the course of the last 5 or 6 years that I've been involved in covering this process, year to year, there have been different numbers that have emerged, and, you know, whether it was strength of schedule or top five wins or, average out-of-conference strength of schedule. Was there anything like that, a touch point that you felt like was a extremely useful piece of criteria that you implemented as a committee this year?
Well, you know, I think it's neat is we take pictures of all the things that we do on the wall. It's a really sadistic thing that we do to look back at what we did in the past. But we created the same grids and team sheets and side-by-side comparisons. And the one thing that we, I would say, amplified and probably applied more correctly this year than ever in the past is the definition of a significant win, significant loss. That category is completely separate and distinct than record versus ranked teams. When you talk about record versus ranked teams, that's your 1 through 5, 6 through 10, 11, 15, 16 through 20. And that's that category. You can split up into quadrants of four, halves, bottom half, top half, all 20, whatever you want to do, okay? Significant wins and losses, by definition, is wins against teams above you, RPI, and losses against teams below you. So someone may have a particular record in the top 20, and they might have five losses in the top 20, but they might not have any significant losses in the top 20, meaning if all your losses are in the top 15 and you're ranked 16th, right? You have no significant losses by definition, even though you still have five losses in the top 16. And if you've got, say, only two wins in the top 15, but because you're ranked 16th, you have two significant wins. So it's just a different way of skinning the cat that I think was it wasn't any more important than any of the other criteria that were up there, but it was a helpful tool when applied properly across the board, because you basically got to take all the teams that were under consideration on either at large or have already qualified, okay, through an AQ, and be able to easily put, by definition, significant wins and significant losses. It gave you another really tangible, viable tool based upon results, and that's cool. It was just a nice other kind of jazzy addition to the whole, wall of information we're putting up there.
I'm picturing, you know, one of those scenes from A Beautiful Mind where John Nash is, you know, got his wax pencil on the windows. But let's talk about this tournament field, because I think that not only has, all the 18 participating teams, not only have they really set forward an exciting next 3 weeks that we can all look forward to, but certainly some of the matchups that that were settled upon, and I maintained over the course of the last couple weeks that the matchups were going to be the most significant decisions that you guys made, brought to light a pretty clear understanding of what this season has unfolded. So, you know, there were three main points that I think coming into this week that into this Selection Sunday that we're going to be most closely paid attention to. So the first was, at that number one seed, Duke-Syracuse, what were kind of the factors that led to making Duke the number one overall seed?
You know, it's funny. To kind of cut to the quick, I mean, as far as the actual quantifiable data, when you look at the team side by side, you know, Syracuse had a couple of these categories, Duke had a couple of those categories. Head-to-head clearly was a split. What they did intra-conference was pretty darn close in the regular season. And in the ACC tournament, one thing that was a differentiating factor between the two teams at the really highest level was common opponents, where within the common opponents between those two teams, if I'm not mistaken, Duke was 3-1 and Syracuse was 2-3. So that was pretty clear-cut piece. And again, you're splitting hairs. You know, you're splitting hairs. I think we just had a really good sense of peace when we looked at everything side by side, that Duke, just, you know, piece by piece, had just a couple more pieces than Syracuse. But again, you're looking at two tremendously talented and dangerous teams. So we think at the end of the day, we still feel comfortable with that being the right decision.
Another, you know, kind of seeding that I think garnered a little bit of attention was Denver being at number five. There were some bracket projections, mine included, that didn't have them hosting a first-round game. So what was it about Denver's resume that really attracted the committee to the 14-2 Pioneers?
You know, it's interesting. When we were going through the exercise of the information, I think in the first couple of iterations of what we were throwing up on the walls, you know, Denver probably wasn't getting as much play as they got once one particular philosophy clicked. There's, if you take a step back and you look at it from a longer view, the way we were looking at Loyola had a great deal of commonality the way we were looking at Denver. You're looking at two, you know, teams, very high winning percentage, strength of schedules were not that good compared to the other teams that were on the board. Their interconference situations were not as strong as anticipated and not the strongest amongst the other teams that were in consideration. But as we looked at it, we saw a great deal of commonality of their complete bodies of work in the regard that if you're going to treat Loyola one particular way, you're doing a disservice to how you're viewing Denver's data. So we came to a conclusion that because there is such a strong comparison between their winning percentage, their non-conference strength of schedule, the significant wins, significant losses. I mean, Denver's only has two losses. Again, people tend to lose track of when they get so absorbed in this the RPI and that really just being a placeholder number that Denver is 14-2 and Loyola is 15-1. That's the two highest winning percentages in the league. And one of the criteria in selection is win-loss record. You can't lose the fact of they did exactly what they had to do. No losses below 21, a boatload of wins, 21 and below. But you look at Denver, and they, by definition, have no significant losses. Their lowest loss is Duke. It's 3. Their second loss is Penn at 2. So you start to do all of these analysis, and the categories that they lose on, they lose pretty strong, okay? You can't argue that away. But the other categories that they have stood out. So I think when people take a step back and go back to the three magic words, body of work, and you start to put these teams side by side with one another, you're like, okay, they actually do have significant traction. So they actually came up aboard pretty rapidly. When we started going through, okay, yeah, we know we're going to lose. They're going to lose that category. We know they're going to lose that category. But they're winning this one, they're winning this one, and then this one. They're winning common opponents. They're winning significant wins and losses. They have the lowest average RPI loss of all the teams in the tournament, 3. Because and actually, if you went a decimal point, it'd be 2.5 because their losses are number 2 and number 3 teams. It's just an institution that when you took a step back and really digested everything and threw it back out, had significantly more good and quality components and selection criteria than they didn't. So there you go. That's how Denver kind of crept up. And I think it was just one of those, that was an aha moment when we said, if we're going to treat Loyola one way based upon their body of work, there's definitely a parallel truth to Denver.
And, you know, one of the other things, one of the other elements of the tournament pool that people are always going to focus on is the bubble. And, you know, I think that in comparison to years past, it was relatively small this year. And, you know, my understanding is that it came down to Harvard versus Hofstra for the final at-large spot. Is that accurate? And if so, what shaded things towards Harvard?
Yeah, that's 100% accurate. I mean, and this goes back to one of your first questions. We did what we always do. We're diligent to the teams that are in the discussion. You know, we went through the exercise with Yale, with Princeton, with Penn State, with UMass, with Fairfield, because, you know, they're top 20 team. There's a couple good things here. There's a couple of blemishes there. But then when we started to really drill down, the bubble got really small, really fast, towards the end, I should say, towards the end, not on day one, not on Saturday. But then, you know, once Fairfield lost in the ECAC, that, you know, obviously hurt their resume collectively, just from a whole different category, or a lot of different categories, I should say, in selection criteria. But when you put Harvard and Hofstra side by side, there's a lot. This goes back almost like the Duke-Syracuse analysis, where this team's got that one, this team's got that one. So it kind of went back and forth and back and forth, and then we started to, again, go back to some of these, you know, important criteria where you can really find some discernible differences where in significant wins, they both beat Cornell, okay? So their high win is both the same thing, Cornell at 8. And then, you know, Hofstra with a win over Drexel, Harvard 2 wins over Yale. But then you start to get down into significant losses. The lowest loss that Harvard has is 19. And then you had 2 losses below 21. With Hofstra, which, again, here's one thing that we also made important is we never double dipped on categories, meaning once one thing has already been said towards strength of schedule or that, you can't say, okay, well, this and that, because you can say those low losses affect strength of schedule and non-conference and so on and so forth. But to itself, losses below 21 and significant losses, ranked versus record versus ranked opponents, that's where the swing started to happen with Hofstra and Harvard. And, I think it's closer than people thought, because of the way the criteria is viewed, there's no prioritization. But that's what started to melt away. And, that was it. And I would say after Hofstra, it's kind of hard to say who were the next 2 or 3 out, because at the end of the day, when Harvard lost, the discussion was just between Harvard and Hofstra. There wasn't anybody else.
Jim Sidlitsky, chair of the selection committee, as always, we really appreciate your time. Enjoy this conversation, and I understand that you've had a long couple of days, and hopefully you can hit the sack here pretty soon.
Thank you. It's always great to speak with you, and thanks again for having me.
And the Inside Lacrosse Selection Sunday Special Edition podcast continues with Albany head coach Scott Marr, whose Great Danes will play Loyola in the first round of the NCAA tournament, kicking things off Saturday at noon in what I think I can, with relative confidence, say is probably going to be the most anticipated first round matchup. Certainly the high flying Danes against a really good number one ranked team in Baltimore. And Coach Marr, you know, this isn't something that you're unfamiliar with. Your team is one that people like to watch wherever they go. And you know, coming off of an America's championship and a really historic day in Stony Brook, I would imagine that there's a lot of excitement surrounding your program. How do you put that into words?
Yeah, well, certainly, first of all, thank you for having me on the show, and we're super excited. I mean, what a weekend for us. You know, we have to go to overtime with Stony Brook on Thursday. They played outstanding. Their offense really came alive and played very well. And then Saturday's game against UNBC, where we have an opportunity for Miles and Lyle to both go over 100 points in the same season, and then for Lyle to tie the all-time scoring record. So, it just was, you know, just was almost overwhelming in the sense of how many accomplishments these guys have done here in the last couple of years. Just so much fun to watch, and they just bring so much life, I think, to the sport. And, want to keep it going here. You know, we're excited about Loyola. They are certainly, obviously, a very good team, number one in the country for most of the year. 2 years ago, winning the national championship. So you're talking about a very proven and very battle-tested team, and we got our hands full, but we're certainly excited about the opportunity to come to Baltimore and come away with a win.
Last year, a lot was made about the matchup versus Denver and taking on a number 3 seed this year. Do you feel like are you satisfied with the job the committee did in terms of reflecting the resume that your team put together and how that manifests itself in your position in the NCAA tournament?
Yeah, I guess, you look at it. I know, again, being on the committee a couple of years back, so many variables that go into it between travel and finding the right matchups and not playing teams who play each other, those types of things. We were excited to win and be a part of the tournament. I thought it was a little interesting that Harvard was in a sense ahead of us playing a 6 seed and we're playing a 3 seed. We played Harvard, we beat them 14-8. Our RPI was higher than theirs. But it is what it is. Like I said, maybe they just didn't want us going to Notre Dame and having some of the travel issues we had last year with the Denver game. But 16 teams, 18 teams now are certainly are very qualified and very, very competitive. So we know we're going to have to beat some good teams in order to get to our goal.
You're bringing the number one ranked scoring offense to Baltimore to take on the number two ranked scoring defense. Saving a particular personnel matchup for a second from now. What's your thoughts on the style that you think this game is going to be played at?
Well, I haven't seen much of Loyola, to be honest. We don't play them, and didn't play too many common opponents. So only saw games, on TV. I saw them play Duke, I believe. Watched a little bit of the Hopkins game. I know in the past, the last couple of years, Charlie has done a great job with his team as far as playing the game and running and gunning and getting up and playing fast. So hopefully that continues on Saturday. The defense, just looking at it, I know just watching the goalie, he's a big, big kid, takes up a lot of the goal. He's got quick hands. A lot of people talk about the Fletcher kid. Again, haven't seen that much of him. I think he's a nice defender for sure. I think they have a long stick midfielder that gets up and down the field. So I think it poses some matchups for us, in a sense of, getting the ball up and down the field. Hopefully it's a fast game, and hopefully, they're going to want to play fast offensively and make it a fun game to play.
You mentioned Joe Fletcher. He's the only college player that's in the mix for the U.S. national team, which in and of itself implies that, certainly he's got some weight behind him. But at the same time, understanding that you're not that familiar with his style of play, I'm curious as to what your opinion is of how elite defenders have tried to approach covering Lyle Thompson and how you as a team have tried to, adjust based on matchups and in terms of opening up looks for your offense to the degree that fans can maybe expect to see something similar this weekend.
Yeah, I mean, every team has been different in their approach. We've seen shutoff, we've seen no slides, we've seen early slides, we've seen a little bit of zone. So we've seen kind of a mix of everything, to be honest. I think for us, after we had lost to Canisius, we really took a look at saying, hey, we got to step back and figure out how we're going to win these slower type games, when teams are holding on to the ball against us, and trying to keep the ball away from our offense and being patient. So we really talked a lot more about being patient at the beginning of the game, figuring out what defense is, what the defense is going to do to us and how they're going to try to stop Miles and Lyle, and then again let the game come to us and not try to get everything in that first quarter and end up turning the ball over because you get frustrated because you don't have it or something like that. So Coach Dwan has done a great job with his defense down there, and then Charlie obviously is a goalie and has a defensive mind. Just watching some of the games, like I said, they've kind of gone in and out of man-to-man and zone, very difficult to tell when they're in which, so they do a really nice job of disguising their zone and going back to their man-to-man. So we have to be alert. We got to be ready. We have to be ready to move the ball. And certainly, our big players have to play big, and I'm sure they're saying the same thing for them. Ward and Pontrello have to have big games for them as well. And Miles and Lyle and Ty, they have to have big games for us. And our supporting cast has to play well. Our midfielders have done a great job being productive in our games here the last 5 or 6, 7 games, and Fierstein and Cox and Garziano and Matt Bertram. So got to continue to get some goals from our midfielders.
And then the last one is just that, when you kind of read some articles or listen to Lyle and Miles talk about what they think might be different this season, they talk about a confidence that could potentially and hopefully will manifest itself in not simply getting to the NCAA tournament, but winning games in the NCAA tournament. How do you as a staff kind of view that permeating throughout your throughout your entire team?
Well, I think the thing is right now is that we believe we can win. You know, we do believe that we can beat anybody in the country. You know, you go back and think, you know, they talked about on the show tonight where, you know, Loyola has a national championship under their belt a couple of years ago. He's got 50% of his team back that accomplished that feat, you know, so he's got some veteran guys in there. We kind of feel similar. We haven't won a national championship, but we did something last year as a team that only Virginia had done in the
places
in the same season. You know, we go back this year, we lose in overtime to Syracuse in the dome again. You know, we go to UMass, we hold them to 4 goals in the first half. We go to Penn State, we're beating Penn State 15-6 going into the fourth quarter. So all over the field, our defense, our face-off guys, our midfielders, you know, Lyle and Miles and Ty are getting all the focus and all the attention, but those guys believe in their teammates. And we've played very, very well at times throughout this year. If you look at our schedule, there's 6 teams in the tournament that we played this year in our schedule. So we have played very good teams, and I take a little bit of offense to the fact that we haven't been battle-tested because I think that's wrong. When you're talking about a team that has 3/4 of the team is back from last year, that went into the dome and went into the Homewood Field, and then went into the dome again this year and lost in overtime, I think that's pretty battle-tested. And I think everybody was pretty high on Penn State and UMass at the times when we were playing them, and we did a pretty nice job against those teams. So, you know, we're going to come in with a little bit of a chip on our shoulder, and we'll be ready to play.
Well, Scott Maher, really appreciate your time. Thank you so much. Congratulations on making it back to the NCAA tournament, and enjoy this week of preparation you get to spend with your team.
Great. Thanks, Jerry. I appreciate it.
And the Inside Lacrosse Selection Sunday podcast continues with Richmond head coach Dan Shimati, whose Spiders, in their inaugural season, win the inaugural ASUN Championship and advance to the NCAA tournament to take on the Air Force Falcons in a Wednesday night playing game. And first of all, Coach Shimati, thank you so much for your time. Congratulations on this really momentous accomplishment for your program.
Thanks, Terry. I appreciate all those kind words.
So I suppose, can you put into context for, you know, fans and you know, folks who are maybe a little unfamiliar with what lacrosse at Richmond is like, how big of an accomplishment this is kind of within your program, within your athletic department?
You know, it's something that we're certainly really, really excited about, Terry. You know, obviously, you know, as far as an accomplishment, I think all that credit goes to our guys. You know, I've said it, you know, over and over this season to, you know, pretty much anybody who will listen. We've got a really hardworking group of guys, and I know everybody is working hard, you know, and at a Division I level, and, you know, that's why they are at the Division I level, and, you know, especially the teams that are playing at the top, you know, our guys, and maybe it's because they're young and they're going through it for the first time, but, you know, they don't say boo, you know, when we ask them to do something. You know, they do it. And, you know, that's kind of been one of the perks of the program is, you know, the way that we do everything the first time, it's kind of all that they know. So, you know, we're trying to, just, you know, do things the way that, you know, we're just trying to model, you know, our program after, you know, a combination of the programs where we're from and, you know, things that really, you know, we really, really believe in. So, you know, I think, you know, something that certainly, you know, maybe, you know, the biggest accomplishment, you know, when I look at it is, you know, we had a pretty small window to put the team together. The program starting in November of 2012, that's when I was hired. To then, you know, the month of, you know, April there with, you know, getting students to commit to Richmond and to apply to Richmond. And, you know, that was a short window there, you know, that's for sure. So, that was something that, you know, for me personally, that, you know, makes it, you know, very, very sweet.
And one of the things that's most notable about you know, any program as young as yours making a step like this is there's so little in the way of tournament experience on your roster, and it almost all falls, you know, in the coaching staff. You know, most notably having won a national championship 2 seasons ago. How are you going to try to impart some of that experience on your players as they prepare for the second season?
Well, we're just gonna make sure that, you know, nothing really changes. You know, we're gonna, you know, go through our normal routine. You know, we're not gonna, you know, try and pull out, you know, hidden ball tricks and, you know, hour long film sessions or, you know, anything like that. We're gonna just kind of stick to our routine, and, you know, I think that's gonna allow our guys to remain comfortable. And you know, it's just another game. You know, so. You know, that'll be the hardest part of just kind of, you know, calming the guys' nerves, you know, down for there. But, you know, from that standpoint, you know, being, you know, a young, you know, inexperienced group, but, as young and as inexperienced as we are, you know, our guys that have been on the field, you know, they've been on the field all year. So, you know, they've grown up quite a bit.
I was speaking with Coach Saramet over at Air Force today, and he called you both, you know, a friend and a little bit of a confidant in terms of, he said that in earlier this spring he reached out to you for a man-up play. He said that if you guys met up, he wasn't going to be afraid to use it against you.
I remember that conversation well.
So that being said, how familiar are you with his team in this matchup?
I am not very familiar with their team right now. I know that. He's got, you know, his kind of guys, and, you know, having, you know, a bunch of guys like Coach Saramet, you know, worries me the most, you know, cause he was, you know, a heck of a player, you know, back in his day for sure. But, I'm not very familiar with their team. You know, we've, you know, played their program for, you know, for a few years, you know, when I was at Loyola. So, you know, their system, you know, if they're still doing some of the same stuff, you know, we'll kind of, you know, we'll remember some of that stuff. But, you know, I know that, you know, they're a lot different from us in terms of, you know, they have a lot of seniors, and we, you know, we don't have any seniors. So, you know, big discrepancy there for sure. But we'll get to know those guys by Wednesday night.
And that's the last question I was hoping to get you out on, as I realize that you've got a very busy schedule here on Sunday night. And that is, how do you describe the unique situation of finding out where you're going and what your situation is here so late on a Sunday, and then having to play on Wednesday?
It's it's not much different than how the whole year has been, Terry, to be honest with you. You know, with so many young guys, you know, there's been a lot of different, you know, things that have kind of prepared us for this, you know, where it's such a short, things change all of a sudden. You know, it's definitely a short turnaround, you know, all that stuff, you know, I'm confident we'll get it worked out. And, you know, however the travel, you know, ends up, you know, or whatever the situation, you know, we'll make the most of it. And we'll make sure that, you know, the whole while we're staying focused on, you know, the reason we are traveling, and you know, the job that we're there for. So,
well, Dan, I want to thank you again for your time. Congratulations on a very historic evening for your program, and good luck going forward.
So, thanks, Terry, and obviously, you know, I, as I didn't mention before, you know, I do think of Coach Saramet the same way, a friend and a confidant. So, it's gonna be, you know, it's gonna be fun to you know, stand, you know, next to him and talk to him, you know, during the pregame warmups. And you know, I've always thought of Coach Saramet as one of my most favorite guys in this profession. You know, kind of gravitate towards each other, you know, recruiting events and all that stuff. So, you know, I'm really happy for their team and, you know, the season that they've had. You know, I really, you know, couldn't be happier for them. So, you know, we're looking forward to you know, to playing them, you know, because, you know, we think they're you know, solid competitors and they are a really, really, you know, good team. You know, they're obviously going to, I'm sure they're going to give us a lot of trouble. So, you know, we'll do our best there.
2 Wildcats. I'm sure Coach Massera is going to enjoy watching that game a lot.
I hope so.
And the Inside Lacrosse Selection Sunday podcast continues with Matt Kerwick, head coach of the Cornell Big Red, who have advanced to the NCAA tournament. Is just in kind of a crazy season has unfolded, certainly for the Big Red. And Coach Kerwick, you know, as you kind of look ahead to the second season with a group that has, I would imagine you describe them as having grown a lot over the course of this season, but at the same time, facing a Maryland team in a first-round matchup that harkens back to last year. What are your thoughts on where your team is at as you prepare for this matchup?
Well, first of all, Terry, thanks for having me on, and very excited for Cornell Lacrosse and Cornell University to be involved in the tournament. You know, we didn't finish the season the way we had hoped, and you know, we played, I think, a pretty good game the other night against Penn. It was a heck of a lacrosse game, but unfortunately, we didn't come out on the end that we wanted to. But we're very excited to be in the tournament, and I think our guys are very eager and very excited to show what we can do. And you know, going to Maryland, they're obviously an outstanding team, and last year's last year. We're not even going to think about that. We just need to go down there and play our very best lacrosse.
And so, as you mentioned, obviously, your team is at least tournament ready in the way that you're coming off of an Ivy League semifinal matchup that, as you described, is very intense and certainly tested your team's mettle. What have you seen in by way of development over the course of the stretch of the season that makes you feel like you're in a good position to match up well against a Maryland team that is so veteran heavy and you know plays such a certainly can be described many ways. I like to call it a methodical and maybe defensive heavy style.
Well, I think that, first of all, we have some great leadership on this team. You know, our captains have been phenomenal, Tom Freshour and Danny Lintner on attack and Connor Busick and Matt Donovan. So, you know, I think the biggest thing that we have right now is that we're really good up the middle. You know, our goaltending's been great with Christian Knight. He's a freshman, but he's been fantastic. You know, Tom Freshour and Jordy Stevens on defense. And then, you know, with Doug Tesoriero doing a great job facing off for us. Connor Busick, John Hogan in the midfield. And then on attack, Matt Donovan's been our leader. And Danny Lindner's as good as a finisher as you're going to find. So we feel like we have, you know, very good, you know, solid leadership. You know, great guys up the middle, and hopefully we're going to, you know, play our very best. We know that Maryland's going to bring in an outstanding group of guys at us, and they're very talented, you know, in every position, and we don't know much about them. So we need to take a look at them tonight and tomorrow and Tuesday and just see what we can do.
Taking a step back for a moment, you know, one of the things that's so unique about Selection Sunday is just realizing that there's one moment where you learn your fate and you quickly shift focus to prepare for your impending opponent. But there is a period of time as the selection show unfolds, and you know, for every team it's different. How do you describe the mood or the sense in the room as your team was preparing to learn what the next week holds in store for you?
Well, I think we told our guys that, you know, it's uncertain at this point. We didn't finish the season the way we had hoped, and I've been doing this a long time. I've been a part of a few teams that, you know, you thought maybe you were going to get in and you didn't, and I've been a part of a couple that got into the tournament that you didn't think were going to get in. So you never really know. And when we saw the teams popping up on the list and we didn't pop up, I think there was some nervousness about it. But I think, you know, overall, when it showed up and we saw that we were playing Maryland, the biggest thing was a relief that we were in the tournament. We really wanted to stay together for another week. These guys have worked so hard at it, and I think they're very excited to just have a great week of practice together and just go down there and play as best we can. So I think to get in the tournament, it's a great privilege, and our guys are excited about it, and they know that we haven't played our best down the stretch, and to get in and have another chance to be together for a week is really important to our guys. So we're fortunate, we're lucky, and can't wait to get out there tomorrow on the practice field on show call with our guys.
Well, you know, Coach Carver, we certainly want to thank you for your time and congratulate you once again on making it to the NCAA tournament. And I'd just like to get you out on this. And you kind of referenced it a little bit, but I'm interested in maybe a little bit more specific in terms of, you know, what are the types of things that, you know, as you really do relish, you know, it's springtime, obviously, depending on your academic calendar, there's finals going on. But at the same time, the opportunity to you know, move, stay alive in advance. What are the types of things that you're going to talk with your team about just to make sure that the level of fun, the level of enjoyment is as high as, you know, I know you want it to be?
Well, I think it's that's a great question. And for us, it's all about being together, and these guys have worked so hard, not just for a year, but for 4 years or 3 years, depending on what year they are in school, and to come into the fall and work so hard in the weight room and get ready for your season. These guys put so much into it, and they represent the program so well and the school so well. I don't think people can understand that aren't involved in it. And to see them continue to work, and no matter what the situation, you lose a couple, you win a couple, whatever it is, when you have the opportunity to continue to play into the tournament, it's a big deal. And these guys really cherish that. And I can't wait to get out there with them tomorrow. And so we're just going to tell them, hey, let's be where we are and play as best we can. And it's a game, but you want to play your best. So that's all we can do in practice, and we'll see how it plays out.
Coach Kerwick, thanks so much for your time. Congratulations again on extending your season another week, and good luck going forward.
Thanks, Terry. Take care.
And the Inside Lacrosse Selection Sunday podcast continues with Denver head coach Bill Tierney, whose Pioneers are Big East champions and hosting the North Carolina Tar Heels in Denver in the first round of the NCAA tournament. And Coach T, you know, obviously a really successful weekend for you guys in Philadelphia. Can you start by describing where you feel like your team's at this point in the season?
Well, obviously we feel like we're playing very well, Terry. It's I'm sure all the people out there, talk about battle tested and, our league being a little weaker and, you do what you have to do. This team is just, has faced a lot of stuff. We've traveled cross country 7 or 8 times already this year. And we just don't worry about that kind of stuff. And, it's really just about us executing and us playing the best we can. Every game is presents its own struggles, but I don't care, what the season looks like. You come out 14-2, winning the regular season and the tournament in any of these lacrosse leagues, and you feel like you've had a good season.
When you look up and down the bracket field, there's varying degrees of familiarity at this point, and certainly when you look at the Denver-North Carolina matchup, familiarity is definitely a trend. You guys scrimmaged in the preseason and certainly have met in the postseason each of the two previous years. What does that do to a matchup like this as you talk to your team and try to get them prepared for your first-round game on Saturday?
Well, it makes it a different preparation because it becomes more of last year, for instance, we had Albany. We didn't know a thing about Albany other than the Thompsons, and we knew that we had to, get a new book out and start writing, so to speak, and defend in a different way and score in a different way and stress things in a different way by knowing your opponent as well as we know Carolina and they know us. It's really just going to be about execution. I don't think anybody's going to change a heck of a lot from our scrimmages and our postseason games. They've both been shootouts. Our scrimmages, other than this year, are normally close. To be honest, they beat us pretty good in the scrimmage this past January. So it does change how you go about your business. In just the mentality, I think the idea certainly is just to stay as businesslike as we've been. We've been facing a losing your out situation or scenario for the last 5-6 weeks, and our guys have just handled it really well. We've had some tough games. We've had an overtime game. We've had some tough halves like we did to start the game the other day against Villanova. The thing about this kind of league and this kind of season is that people know Denver now, and they know that we're a team that they circle on their schedule, and we got everybody's best effort. So I don't feel at all worried about the battle-tested part that I keep hearing about. But what I feel worried about is that we're playing one of the best teams in the country, coached by one of the best coaches in the country, and that it's a first-round game here in Denver.
And there are two things that you touched on there that I want to follow up on. And the first is a little bit more on Carolina. And I think that, when I look at this team and I wonder, you know, where did the Tar Heels distinguish themselves? It starts with their ability to, you know, attack, particularly from the attack, with two primary Dodgers. And as you look at your team defensively as they've grown over the course of the season, how do you feel like that is a particular area where you guys match up in terms of the way that you can defend Joey Sankey and Jimmy Bitter?
Well, you know, and it's a similar question that maybe you asked me last year about the Thompsons. These two guys, not only are they quick, not only are they talented, not only are they experienced, but have such savvy, and they bring something to the table that you very rarely see, and that is just the whole package of quickness, ability to catch and shoot, ability to play the two-man game, attack from behind, attack from up top. These are wonderful young men, and they're great, great players. Heck, they beat us by 8 in the scrimmage, and they didn't even have Sankey. This is a team with a plethora of talent, and we know that. We have a young man in Christian Bergdorf who's had a heck of a season as a defenseman this year. He's actually taken over Carson Cannon's lead role in defending, so we feel like we have two good stoppers back there now, and. We've got an experienced defensive midfield. Our same guys are back, and so and two goalies who have been through these Carolina Denver fires. And so who knows? It's just a matter of such familiarity and try to understand that you never know what's going to happen on a given day. We played them so many times in the past four years that everyone's been a little bit different. But I think I know from our side, and I'm pretty sure from their side, there's great respect. I just admire Joe so much and what he's done with that Carolina program. Great feeling, great anticipations coming into this game, I'm sure. And, I'm sure it'll be another great game.
The other thing you mentioned is kind of obvious. Carolina's coming to town, and that means that you're a top seed hosting a game, a 5 seed, as a matter of fact. And I'm curious, is there any part of you that was surprised that the committee made that decision, or do you feel like that was vindicated, justified, and to some degree expected within your coach's office?
Well, I think it's a hard question to ask because you never know what way the committee's going to go. Had it been a pure strength of schedule thing or a pure, giving the teams that play each other over and over again, credit for their wins and forgetting about their losses, then absolutely yes, I'm surprised. We were going into this past weekend with our Big East tournament, telling our guys we had to win. Now, on the other hand, I think if you look at the body of work and you look at the fact that we had our two losses were to number 2 and 3 RPI teams, and if RPI is going to have a lot of play into this thing, we were the 7th or 8th RPI program, so we got a high RPI. Our only losses were to number 2 and 3, and I think you've got to take losses into account, and it's very clear from the seedings that the committee took losses into account, and that, obviously I feel good about that because we've got a home game. Never feel good about playing Carolina, but feel good about the fact that we got a home game. When we came here 5 years ago, Terry, we promised the people we would bring big time games here, and this is the biggest time of the big time games we've ever had here. So we're excited about this and know that the excitement comes from the ability of, North Carolina Tar Heels.
And that was the note I wanted to leave you on. It was I remember very distinctly the I don't want to say hoopla, but the anticipation surrounding Penn's visit to Peter Barton Stadium a couple years ago, and the sellout and the ticket situation and everything else. What are your expectations for what fans are going to see Saturday night 7:30? On University Boulevard.
Well, they're going to see long lines at the ticket booth this week, I can tell you that, and it's going to sell out very quickly, and hopefully we're going to talk about finding a way to put more people in the stadium, because it's going to be rocking and rolling. It's a 5:30 game, so it'll be, hopefully the weather will be good, and you got to, hopefully we'll have a typical Denver day and a great late afternoon game, and it's gonna be rocking, and I think we owe that to North Carolina. We owe them, to bring them a great atmosphere, to bring a good playoff atmosphere, as Indianapolis did for our quarterfinal game last year, and as Carolina did for our first round game 2 years ago. So this is getting pretty repetitive, but each year is different. Each team's a little different, and I know Peter Barton Stadium will be sold out very quickly, and it's going to be a crazy, late afternoon game around here.
Excellent. Well, Coach Tierney, thank you so much for your time. Good luck this weekend, and certainly enjoy as your team prepares for at least one more week of lacrosse.
Thanks, Derek.
And the Inside Lacrosse Selection Sunday podcast continues with Chris Wojcik, head coach of the Harvard Crimson, who will head to Notre Dame to take on the Fighting Irish in the first round of the NCAA tournament. And Coach Wojcik, you know, obviously coming off of a hard-fought game in the Ivy League Championship today against Penn. And I would imagine that it's an interesting paradigm shift for you and your team to go from having your fate in your own control, in your hands, and then quickly, realizing that there's a pretty good chance that the championship committee might give you extra life after the championship game doesn't go your way. How did you and your staff and your team adjust or discuss, kind of what the next few hours held after that Penn game this afternoon?
Yeah, it's been a bittersweet day for us. We were fortunate enough to earn the top seed in the league, host, beat a really good Yale team on Friday night, and then come out today and lose to Penn. And not win the AQ. And then, obviously every coach wants to be able to have two opportunities to get in. And I thought that, we played a very difficult schedule. It not only helped us really accelerate our team development as the year went on, but also, helped enhance our resume to the NCAA tournament committee. So we were really happy to get the invite, and we're looking forward to getting back to practice.
And obviously that's a theme that, the 18 teams whose lives would continue to the second season can share. And I love hearing coaches talk about what they how they regard their team having another opportunity, an extra, in the case of the four teams that are playing games 2 days, in the case of your team, an extra 5 or 6 days to be together and to prepare. What are you most looking forward to as you guys take the practice field tomorrow in terms of having another opportunity to be together as a team?
Yeah, definitely. We're I love this group. It's a special group of kids. We've had just an unbelievable experience this year together. And, I think the theme, our last couple of weeks is being able to earn another week together. And, we got that tonight. So just the opportunity to obviously be together again, playing the sport that we love around a group of people that you love and you trust. That's first. And then second, as you said, it's an unbelievable opportunity to be a part of the NCAA tournament field. We haven't been there as a program since 2006. So it's been a while, but, everyone now has life and everyone's on equal footing here, and, whoever wins, it's going to have to beat everyone. So, we're really happy to reset. And, as I said, we look forward to getting back at it this week.
What does it mean for your program to be back in the NCAA tournament, as you said, after 8 or 9 seasons?
Mm-hmm. It means a lot. I think this is something that we've been building towards. And I think we really broke through, this season, within the league. It was great to win the Ivy League regular season championship. We came up short in the tournament, but it means a lot to our our alumni and our administration who've, put so many resources into helping us build, towards an Ivy League championship program and then, a national contender.
And the Inside Lacrosse Selection Sunday podcast continues with Drexel head coach Brian Volker as the Dragons are in the NCAA tournament for the first time in program history on the heels of a CAA championship victory over Hofstra. And Coach Volker, that's where I want to start, because obviously to win in such dramatic fashion on a very strong rival's home field must have been a unique and special circumstance. Can you describe what it was like for your team to realize that you were going to the NCAA tournament last night?
Yeah, well, I mean, I don't know if anybody's seen the highlights. I mean, our guys were definitely very excited, and they showed a lot of emotion. It's a big win for our team and for the program, and to do it against a team like Hofstra, who had such a great year at their place, obviously was pretty special for our guys.
And can you just talk about the idea of having knocked on the door of the NCAA tournament so frequently over the last 5 to 6 years, and to now have finally broken through? What does it mean, not just for your team and you know, this group of four classes, but for the program and the way in which you kind of, you know, identify as a part of the Drexel community as well?
Well, you know, I mean, there's a lot of people that have gone into building this thing, and, you know, we just feel like we've kept trying to get better, and, you know, we have been knocking on the door. There's some times that I scratch my head and try to figure out why we didn't get in the tournament. But, you know, this year we didn't leave any doubt, and we didn't leave it in anybody else's hands, and we took care of business in the tournament and got the win. You know, it's a pretty special group of kids, but there's also been a lot of people, you know, here at Drexel that have, you know, played and, you know, done things before we got here that really helped us build, you know, the program to where we've gotten it now. So obviously it was a great night, and it's been a great season, and we're really looking forward, you know, to going to the NCAA tournament and playing a pretty tough team coming up here next weekend.
And one of the byproducts of this being the first time playing in the NCAA tournament is that there may be a few, unfortunate lacrosse fans who haven't had an opportunity to see your team play either at all or very much over the course of this season and the last couple. So for those who are unfamiliar with your team, how do you kind of describe your style, and particularly, who have been most influential down the stretch that have allowed you to get to this point?
Well, I mean, if you look at our team, I think there's a couple of things that jump off the page. I mean, offensively, we've got a pretty core group of guys that have a bunch of points, led by Ben McIntosh, who was the player of the year in our conference and was the player of the tournament, in the CAA tournament, and he's had a phenomenal year, and he's as good as any middie in the country and does so many things for us. Nick Trezano is a senior that's had a great season at attack. Ryan Belka is a midfielder that, you know, first team all CA guy that's got a bunch of points piled up. And Cole Schaefer, freshman attackman, who had an incredible CA tournament, including the game winner in overtime, the third overtime against Hofstra. So offensively, I mean, we've got a pretty good group there. The other thing, you know, Nick Saputo's had an incredible year at the faceoff X and has given us a lot of extra possessions. And, you know, we have some kind of, I don't want to say no names, but some guys that have kind of plugged away. And, you know, last year I didn't think we were good enough on defense, and we've kind of corrected some things and gotten a pretty good formula down on the defensive end. But I think, you know, face-offs and offense are really what we're known for.
And looking ahead to your matchup against Penn on Sunday, certainly yours is a program that identifies very strongly with Philadelphia, and so it almost seems fitting to take on a crosstown rival. What are your thoughts on this matchup and kind of what it means, and how excited you feel like Philly lacrosse fans will be for it?
Well, you know, I mean, me personally, there's a lot of things, you know, going through my head. But it means a lot for Philly. It means there's two pretty good teams in the region. Mike's done a great job there, and their team this year is obviously very, very talented and done some great things. And you know, winning the Ivy tournament this weekend was a great, you know, great thing for their program. It's going to be a really good matchup, and, you know, we've scrimmaged them. We scrimmage them in the fall and in the spring. Mike and I obviously know each other pretty well. I think it's a really good thing for Philadelphia lacrosse, that's for sure. And, you know, to have a tournament game in Philly, and, you know, we'll probably walk over and, you know, play the game on Sunday, but it'll be an interesting matchup, that's for sure.
And for those that maybe don't know, the reason that this is kind of putting some thoughts through your head is you previously were the head coach of the Penn Quakers, and so you mentioned that obviously there's kind of a lot going through your head. What is that like? Realizing that, you know, you've got your fingerprints all over both programs that are going to be taking the field on Sunday.
Well, like I said, it almost puts a smile on your face, and you don't know if the NCAA has a sense of humor when they do that stuff or what. It just worked out that way. It's definitely interesting. You know, Mike and I are partners, in a tournament together, we're pretty close. That's, you know, kind of interesting to begin with. It's obviously a little bit strange, you know, that I coach at Drexel, which is right across the street from where I used to coach at Penn, and that we're going to end up playing each other in this tournament. But, this past weekend was pretty strange. You know, I coached Sean Nadelin for a couple of years in college. We had to play his team on Thursday. Seth Tierney and I were roommates in college, and, you know, I had to play his team on Saturday night, and, you know, all that stuff. There's a lot of things in the lacrosse world that kind of intertwine people.
And I guess, you know, me being the coach of Penn, you know, a couple of years ago is just one of the, I guess, the storylines of this thing.
Coach Volker, certainly want to congratulate you again on taking a team to the NCAA tournament for the first time in the Drexel Dragons, and good luck going forward.
All right, thanks a lot. Inside the Cross Podcast.